It's Storylines Midwest. I'm Charity Nebbe.
And I'm Keith Taylor. In future shows, we'll take a look at some poetry written in Chicago and a classic of American environmental writing written in Wisconsin. We'll talk with author Charles Baxter about the unforgettable Midwestern love stories he created in his novel, The Feast of Love. But today we're talking about Sinclair Lewis's Main Street and what the book has to say about small towns. You can join our conversation at 866-255-2762.
Small towns have often been stereotyped as being small-minded and suffocating, and Main Street's Carol Kennicott is definitely of that mindset. In this excerpt from Main Street, she is advising a promising young man to flee the village virus.
It's good to clear fields, but not for you. It's one of our favorite American myths that broad plains necessarily make broad minds, and high mountains make high purpose. I thought that myself when I first came to the prairie. Big, new. Oh, I don't want to deny the prairie future. It will be magnificent. But I am equally hanged if I want to be bullied by it. Go to war on behalf of Main Street. Be bullied and bullied by the faith that the future is already here in the present. And that all of us must stay and worship wheat stacks and insist that this is God's country. And never, of course, do anything original or gay-colored that would help make that future. Anyway, you don't belong here. Sam Clark and Nat Hicks, that's what our big newness has produced. Go, before it's too late, as it has been for some of us. Go, young man, go east and grow up with the revolution. Then perhaps you can come back and tell Sam and Nat and me what to do with the land we've been clearing. If we'll listen. If we don't lynch you first.
Like Carol Kennicott, many people have said bad things about small towns and small Midwestern towns. But Tom Fricke is spending at least some of his life studying them. He's the director of the Alfred P. Sloan Center for the Ethnography of Everyday Life. He's an anthropologist who studies the rituals, culture, and daily life of us. To join our conversation, call us here at Storylines Midwest at 866-255-2762. Thanks for being here, Tom.
Sure.
I know that you've spent a lot of your professional life, your early professional life, studying small villages way up in close to the Tibetan Plateau in Nepal. Now you're studying Richardton, North Dakota, and Midwesterners and Main Street towns. Why, Tom? What's the connection?
Well, actually, I don't find them very different. I like to joke that I'm a specialist in towns of 650 people or less. The experience of people the world over, actually, from small towns is very, very similar, and that's one of the striking things that I've actually learned this time around. Mm-hmm. Coming from North Dakota, of course, I seem to be one of those people who went east, as Carol was telling her friend to do. But I found myself asking myself why I was studying these small towns in Nepal, and found that I was doing it for the same reason I was interested in the towns in North Dakota. That is, the feeling that there's something outside that lures you, something that you judge yourself against, and something that has a kind of a powerful lure and judgmental kind of quality to your own life. So going back to North Dakota and going back to the small town in North Dakota is in fact a way of furthering the furthest flung fleeing from the small town that I did when I went to Nepal.
So what exactly are you studying?
In North Dakota?
Mm-hmm.
I got interested in North Dakota. Well, I'm from North Dakota, I should say, first of all. But I got interested because I was looking at a map, and a map from the New York Times, and I noticed that it was one of those maps where they shade the counties. They darken them by a particular characteristic, and there was this dark band going right down the middle of the continent, running from North Dakota down to Texas. And it was a black band that was meant to show the percentage of people who were 65 or older, and that dark black band told me that all the young people were leaving. And I had just gotten back from Nepal, another trip to Nepal, and I realized in the small community I was working in next to the Tibetan Plateau, all the young people were leaving, and they were going to Kathmandu, and they were going to various places. And I realized that I left from that dark band, and I had a reason to go back, because I wanted to actually find out if my reasons for leaving were the same as the people who were out of the town, out of the small towns this time around. And the same as the people who left those small towns for Nepal to go and find jobs, go and find themselves, go and deny something in some sense. I think that I just read Sinclair Lewis. I avoided Sinclair Lewis for a lot of years because coming from a small town in North Dakota, of course, I only knew this book by its reputation, and the reputation is sort of summarized on the back of this paperback copy that I happened to read last week. And it, you know, sort of gives you the impression that Sinclair Lewis meant to debunk small town life, to criticize it. It talks about how the gossip, greed, the conventionality, and the pitifully unambitious cultural endeavors that characterize the small town. Worst of all, the pettiness and bigotry of small town minds. That's the image that I had growing up. That's the way people talked about it in North Dakota, and I avoided it because I had this sort of visceral reaction against that kind of judgment from outside. Going back to it, I realized it's a lot more complex, a very, very complex book. And I think actually Sinclair Lewis was kind of right on the mark. And going back to the small towns in North Dakota this time around, I had a sense that, in fact, the things that he lionizes or valorizes in those towns are very much the kinds of qualities in the towns now where, that are living and vibrant and almost heroic.
Susan in Elmore, Ohio, is joining us now. Hi, Susan.
You can hear me. I travel every weekend from Lansing back to Ohio. Uh-huh. I go to law school up there. I do teach English, and I actually taught in the town that the Sherwood Anderson book is based on.
Oh, yeah. Which town is that?
Clyde, Ohio.
Clyde, Ohio.
Yeah. And there was sort of resistance about teaching that book.
Uh-huh.
And I live in a very small town now myself, and I kind of think it's charming living in a small town. I think I like it.
Good.
I didn't before, and I've become accustomed to it. So,
did you have a hard time integrating into small town life?
Yeah, I did. I heard a comment once or read it. Somebody talked about being accepted into a small town, and the old gentleman made the comment, well, you know, if your cat had kittens in the oven, you wouldn't call them biscuits. And it's, you know, kind of like that, really. It takes a very, very long time to gain acceptance.
Yeah, it does, as it did for Carol Kennicott in Main Street.
Exactly, yeah. And I just wanted to comment on that. I'm enjoying your program.
Good.
You keep me entertained all the way from Lansing to Ohio every weekend.
Great.
Great, Susan. Thanks a lot for your call.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And Susan gave us a call at 866-255-2762. And, of course, we invite you to do the same thing. If you have a question for Tom Fricke or a comment about small-town life, maybe you are a newcomer to small-town life. I know that's a very difficult position to be in for many people. I know in my family there was a little trouble with that when my mother moved into a small town. It was a difficult assimilation. She made it, but you know, it can be a challenge. So if you have some experiences you want to share or some questions for Tom Fricke, 866-255-2762 is the number to call. And Tom, as you're studying these small towns, you know, you ask the question, so what is driving the young people out of small towns? What are you finding?
A lot of things. Actually, the small towns that I work in the western part of North Dakota are towns that were founded on the basis of dreams. And, you know, there's that booster kind of image that you get out of Main Street. But the dreams that they had were to become mini Chicago's or Minneapolis St. Paul's and that sort of thing. And, of course, you know, there's only room for a few of those. And the towns largely didn't make it. People who are trained for something that's ambitious, you know, through growing up and to have ambitions, they find that they can't come back to small towns. One of the things that I do in the research I do is that I spend a lot of time in the community itself, but I also go and follow that network of people who move out. So I've gone to the places that they've moved to. Some have moved, of course, to Minneapolis. Some have moved to Fargo, North Dakota, which is a big city for people from the smaller towns. And some live in Bismarck, North Dakota, another big city for people from smaller towns. And it's really interesting to sort of map it out, that distance from the town. Folks who live far away are those who might have a more jaundiced view in fact, of that small town, like some of the characters in Main Street. A lot of them had opportunities. There's a case of a doctor, for example, who moved back to be near the town that he was from, which is the one that I do most of my studying in. It's about 625 people out there in western North Dakota. And he moved back from Milwaukee. And I said, well, you know, why do you want to live back in this place? You could live anywhere. You're a doctor. And the movement back is because they find themselves missing something as they go away. They go away, and in the process of confronting other people, the big cities, they sort of get a better sense of who they are, which I think is actually one of the messages in Main Street, and probably one of the messages for anthropologists who go off to Nepal and the Tibetan Plateau, too. We're all driven by something in our background, some kind of set of questions or whatever. And people leave small towns, they immediately think that they're going for jobs and opportunities and careers and a new kind of life. But they're also going to ask questions about themselves. Is this all, or am I only this limited being from this tiny little community? And I think that the ones that come back find that there's something there that they miss, something very, very valuable. Has to do with close networks of people and the like, too. But you can get those in cities. Often there's something else that brings them back. And what they all say, these people who move back, sometimes they only get as close as Fargo. They go out to New York and get back as far as Fargo. But they say, Fargo's like a small town. All the people in Fargo are from the same towns that we're from. They're from Richardton. They're from New Salem. They're from towns of about 600 people. And so we all share this thing, that quality that's lacking in City X, New York, Chicago, or whatever. And it's a kind of intimacy and an acceptance, I think. You know, they can find it again in the city, but in a small town, you're sort of willy-nilly forced to put up with the idiosyncrasies of the people around you. The tendency for Kennicott not to criticize, for example, the people around him who have these irritating habits. Interrupting him when he and his wife have gone off to California and he's telling the stories of where he's been. But, you know, then what's his name? Harry Haydock intrudes and says what he saw there. You know, this very typical. But yet he's very tolerant of that because he's got to live with them. There's an acceptance of the person, even though, you know, obviously they've got some small irritating qualities at the same time.
We've got Chris on the line from Chicago at 866-255-2762. And Chris, you want to weigh in on why young people leave small towns?
Yeah, actually. I'm kind of one of the younger generation, 28-year-old, and I left a smaller town in Michigan to kind of maybe pursue that great career in the larger city such as Chicago. And I'm kind of finding that a lot more of my generation, I think, is tending to kind of want to go back to that small town. Mm-hmm. And quite honestly, I don't know if it's maybe they went to that large city and had these big expectations, but to a certain degree, too, I almost think that a lot of their upbringing in that small town kind of made them who they are, and they feel when they leave that loss is there and they want to go back. And I can't help but I'm leaving Michigan now and heading back to Chicago, and that feeling's still there. I'm going to get to Chicago, but a week or two, I'm going to probably want to be back in a small town in Michigan again sometime, but so
good. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks a lot for your call, Chris. 866-255-2762 is the number to call if you want to weigh in on our conversation here. And Tom or Keith?
Tom, when that intimacy and acceptance that you were talking about, do you think that's what people think of when they talk about small town values and small town virtues? Is it that, or is it something else?
It's something else. I mean, we're always fighting against a stereotype, you know, and, right. And I think that there's no question that Sinclair Lewis was trying to also debunk kind of a stereotype. There's that nostalgic image of the small town. What I found really valuable about the book, which really actually keyed into the fieldwork that I do, I mean, I spend months at a time living in this little community, actually with a family. They happen to be a farm family who live, 4 miles north of the town itself on those section line roads, and so I work on the farm and the whole thing. One thing I felt when I read the book, this Kennicott character, he's a little unformed in the beginning of the book. He has a desire to he has an attraction, obviously, to Carol, and the attraction is that he realizes that he's missing something in the small town. And yet he also is very certain that he's got something valuable there. There's an authenticity. That authenticity is what I think people are trying to get when they go back and imagine the small town. Once you shear off all these sort of absurdist kinds of values, you know, the small town, the perfect small town where there is no social dissension, the perfect small town where everybody gets along and everybody pitches in. True, people pitch in, and true, a lot of people get along, but I have seen feuds in small towns that are, you know, multi-generational kinds of feuds. The beauty of the small town is that I think for people who are from them or are attracted to them is that once you are in a network, there's actually a lot of freedom to be who you are. And that's, I think, part of the message of the book is that freedom to be authentic comes from place in the networks of people that you have around you. So I think there's an attraction to that kind of thing. Family, kinship. When you get, you know, four generations of people living in a town that's only about 650, well, as one of the women of the small town that I work in said, it's pretty hard to find somebody you can marry around here.
What about acceptance of outsiders? I mean, we've talked about this acceptance of the people that you've lived with forever, but what if someone unusual comes into town? What do you find with that?
Like a guy with a ponytail and a Michigan plates on his car. Well, they wonder who it is. There's no question about it. I don't know if anybody's, you know, seen the New York Times, but the New York Times had an article just a few days ago, you know, with this the things from September 11th and all. And they had a stringer out there in a small town in North Dakota, in Steele, North Dakota, where I actually had a cousin who used to live there. They interviewed the one of the people in the town, and she said, oh, we're keeping our eye on everybody. We know when somebody's not from around here, and they stop by at the cafe, and we keep an eye on them. And they certainly do. They keep an eye on them. It takes a while, actually, to be considered a member of the community. And in a sense, you never – in the town that I'm working in, there's a fellow who just retired as the very important guy. I shouldn't identify him too closely, an important guy in the local school system. He's lived there for the last 35 years. And he's very much a part of the community. There's no question. In fact, he's only from 50 miles away from the community. But somebody else who is, you know, a third generation person say, well, even so and so, you know, he'll always be an outsider. Of course, he married locals. So.
That helps.
Yeah.
At least his children belong, right?
Exactly.
Right. We've got Kate on the line in Livonia, Michigan next. Hello, Kate.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I haven't read Main Street, but I read Babbitt just a few weeks ago. Oh. And it was the first Lewis novel I ever read, and I was really struck when I was reading it about the exclusionary tactics and the mindset of the characters in the book and how hard it was for Babbitt to even attempt to think outside what his peers thought. And I just wanted to make the comment that I have known a lot of people in a lot of the more well-to-do suburbs around the Detroit area that this book reminded me of them, and they, even though it's the 90s, I mean, they could have been back there in the 20s. It was amazing to me how I was hearing the same kinds of things from, you know, come out of Babbitt's mouth and the other characters' mouths that, you know, could have been taken from, you know, these small little conservative circles in rather large suburbs around, you know, a metropolitan area, and the people were voicing pretty much the same kinds of ideas and the same kinds of, you know, the same sort of mindset and the same sort of attitudes that were shown in the book.
So I guess that gives Richard Lingeman's point that Sinclair Lewis's books still have a lot to say about life today, a lot of heft. Thanks a lot for your call,
Kate. For years and years and years, people talked about babbittry. I mean, he invented a word that became part of the dictionary, and babbittry being a certain kind of callous, unfeeling mercantilism and Elmer Gantryism about certain kinds of preachers and all this happening on Main Street. His titles became words in the language for a while. Maybe it's time they came back.
866-255-2762 is the number to call. And Mary in Iowa City, Iowa, has been very patient with us. Hello, Mary.
Hello.
What would you like to talk about?
I'd like to ask your guest, maybe this is a question for the guest that left, about Main Street and the small town being metaphor for America itself. I'm judging this from the questions and the comments that I hear on the NPR talk shows, how that we insist that we're innocent. So we have this small town thing that we are always innocent. And I'm not saying that the people got that, you know, that the incident on 11th, that innocent people didn't die. But I'm talking about that thing that goes through America itself as though all of America is one small town. And now I live in a small town. I came from Philadelphia out to Iowa City. Our motto is small town, big city choices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what do you think, Tom? And thanks a lot, Mary, by the way. That's a great question.
Yeah, good
Tom,
question.
Do our small towns function as a kind of metaphor? Does Main Street become a metaphor?
Oh, yeah, they do, yeah. And it's a really good question. One thing about the book is that, as your previous guest mentioned, you know, it's about a marriage and that there are all these layers in it. One of the things that I really enjoyed about it, in fact, was that when you realize that the book was written at a period when, in fact, in America, with these foreign populations from Europe, the push was on in the school system and the like to Americanize the foreigners. Now, he has Scandinavian folks in the book, but and doesn't really give enough attention to the Germans that he was actually surrounded by out there. He's out there, you know, by the seat of German immigration into Minnesota. But what was happening at that period was a real forthright quest to Americanize these people. And Lewis is talking about that. In fact, he's talking about Americanization coming out of, I think, a sense of place and a commitment to place. So in that sense, it is a metaphor for America, because the people who are the most, I think, sympathetic characters in there are people who are quite sure of their location in place. Now, even Carol in the earlier part of the book is a lot of, she's not really fully formed either. And one of the things that she's doing is she's imagining the small town in very much a European village kind of term. And all of her images come from Europe. And it's as she becomes American and Americanized, that is, connects to the place of America through the small town, actually, at the end. And you know, while admitting that she doesn't like some things about it, that I think she achieves her maturity in the book. So I think that's really true. I think it is kind of a metaphor for America, too, which is, although at a slightly different, I guess I'm speaking at a tangent to what Mary had in mind, but I think, I'll go with that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Tom, Mary brought up another very interesting point inadvertently, which is how we all define small towns very differently. If you come from Philadelphia, right. Iowa City's a small town. If you were born in Ogden, Iowa City's a big town. So in your research, how do you define a small town?
That's great. Small towns are the next town over. That's a little bigger is always, you know, the big city. And then of course I'm living with a family when I'm in North Dakota that lives 4 miles north of the town. They're actually farmers, and there's this little thing between townies and the farm kids too. It is a very relative kind of thing. I come from the big city in North Dakota. It was only 17,000 when I was a young kid, 18,000. Now it's 50,000. And it is a big city in North Dakota terms. And yet, for me, a movement east, because east was always the oppressor for people out in the western part of the Midwest, the real cities were Minneapolis, St. Paul, or Madison, Wisconsin, and that sort of thing. A small town is probably, I mean, we don't come up with, you know, sort of that categorical definition, but there's obviously a state of mind that goes with a small town, and neighborhoods can replicate that in the cities. My wife is from Boston, and if her neighborhood does not replicate a small town, then we really don't know what we're talking about when we talk about the attributes of a small town. So it's kind of a state of mind. A connection and a sense of history, and yes, a sense of rootedness and place. I think that can create that small town kind of feel.
We have another question here, a comment from Victoria in Granville, Michigan. Hello, Victoria. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. I've been enjoying this discussion. I haven't read the book yet, but it sounds very interesting.
Wonderful.
My comment is that I've been listening to everybody say that these small towns are really exclusionary. They're kind of closed off to outsiders. I'm originally from Detroit, and I go to school in a small town called Allendale in Michigan. And honestly, most of the students that I go to school with are all from small towns. They're from South Haven and Grand Haven and all these little small towns that I've never even heard of, all in West Michigan. And they are some of the most open and wonderful and just they you know, it was a total culture shock when I first got there that everybody was just walking up to me and smiling and saying hi, and I was just impressed. So I guess that's a whole different idea of what a small town life really is.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, Victoria. My experiences have been pleasant too, although I think that might not be true for everyone. Tom, is that question of acceptance still there? Do you think those people in Richardson would be accept just about everybody?
I think they do. I think it takes a lot of. I mean, there's a when you're talking about small towns or the classic ones in the Midwest, you're talking about places that have a different kind of a relationship to the big city. It's a threatening kind of relationship. The arbiters of culture, of all the values that we hold dear in America, come from big cities. And of course, the economic power and et cetera is in the big city too. This is true of small towns all across the world. It's true up in Nepal and the like. So there's an ambivalence when new people come to these places. They are as afraid of being judged by the person coming in as perhaps that person is by the town that he or she is trying to relocate to. And there's a building of trust that can only happen through time in these kinds of settings. Usually three generations of time.
We just have a moment left, Tom, and I want to ask you, just on a personal level, how do you feel about the future of small towns?
Ah, wow.
I can ask that briefly.
Briefly. Well, they'll always be there. You know, that's always true. And I think that the valuable thing about the small towns will also be there. In many ways, they're always going to be producing people that go to the cities, and a lot of the vibrancy that, for example, America has is largely a result of these people moving to the cities and the vibrancy that any setting has. One reason I like the novel Main Street is I thought that one of the messages of it was that if people were true to themselves and true to their upbringing, wherever it might be, city or otherwise, that there was an honest conversation that could occur that could be mutually beneficial. And I kind of see that as the message of the novel, and also very true in general in the world today, that small towns have a future. They have something to give.
Great. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Tom.
Yeah.
Tom Fricke is the director of the Center for the Ethnography of Everyday Life. I'll get through that next time I say it. Thanks a lot for joining us. This is Storylines Midwest. And for more information on Storylines Midwest or the books we're reading, you can visit our website at storylines.ala.org, or you can go to your local public library. Libraries have copies of the books, program schedules. They often also have discussion guides.
Storylines Midwest is produced by Tamar Charney. Our engineer is Bob Skahn.
We had production help from Rebecca Williams, Amanda McWhorter, and Allison Zatorsky.
Today's readings were performed by Pam Dauber.
Our library discussion guides were written by David Long. Georgia Lomax coordinates the participating libraries.
The executive producer of the Storylines America Project is Paul Zalis.
Storylines Midwest comes to you from the studios of Michigan Radio at the University of Michigan.
Storylines Midwest is a project of the American Library Association, funded by the National Endowment for the Humanities and Barnes & Noble Booksellers.
Every Friday afternoon, summer, winter, spring, and fall, the highways of the Midwest are clogged with cars headed to the lakes, the rivers, and the forests of our North Woods.
The northern forests of the Midwest and the wild world of Ernest Hemingway's Nick Adams stories. Next time on Storylines Midwest.